content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. We're going to start with another essay from 80 Things to Do When You Turn 80. But of course, you don't have to wait until you're 80 to do these things. This one is entitled All My Monsters Are Dead, and it's by Betty McDonald, who contributed to the writing of and performed in TMI Project's What to Expect When You're Not Expecting. I'm 23 years old. I've arrived in New York City on the night train from Richmond, Virginia. My dream to live in the city has begun. As I step to the curb, a taxi stops right in front of me, ignoring the line of waiting would-be fares ahead of me. "Me?" I gesture incredulously. The driver yells, "Get in!" I obey. Once I'm ensconced in the back seat, he lectures me. The theme? Use what you got. What I got, or rather what I had, are youthful good looks. Now, at 82, it's what I no longer have. My subscription to youthful good looks has expired. I no longer deal in the currency of youth, the exchange that could stop a taxi without flagging it down. What I've acquired is age. Unlike my peers and a lot of younger people than I love being old. For one thing, no one expects me to do anything. I get a free pass. For another, whenever I do anything at all, I get extra credit. No one expects me to carry my own groceries or packages. "Shall I put this in your car?" says the young woman at the hardware store, hefting a couple gallons of paint I could easily lift. "Sure," I say, leading the way. Later, in the parking lot of the feed store, I'm transferring a 20-pound bag of birdseed from the shopping cart to my car when a young man rushes over to help. Although I could have done it myself, I'm grateful for his assistance. I like having help. After years of homemaking, earning a living, child raising, and frantically keeping it together with never enough time to do it all, now I have a lot of time. I do whatever I want. Ignoring the to-do list, I go online. I read all the columnists I agree with. I disregard all the ones I don't. I check out Facebook to see what my kids and their partners are doing and what their ex-partners are doing. I appropriate photos of my grandkids at the pool, at the beach, in a hat. I install them in the continuing slideshow I spend hours watching on my computer whenever I'm not reading or writing. I love gazing at their adorable faces. While my kids were small, I longed for long, uninterrupted time to descend unfettered into the rabbit hole of creativity and lose myself in my work. During those years, I kept the creative fires burning by producing small sculptures to sell at craft shows. I supplemented my income with freelance assignments for industry magazines, waiting tables, and house cleaning. Now, with my children grown, I have all the time I need to do whatever I want. Back when I was 65, I discovered a photo in a magazine of a woman 10 years my senior performing an exercise in a Pilates class. Jealousy overwhelmed me. I could do that, I thought. My envy opened a door, alerting to me to what I wanted. Now, 17 years later, and a veteran Pilates student, I am stronger at 82 than I have ever been in my life. I started writing my story a few years ago. Reading my essays aloud in a memoir writing group empowered me. Soon I enrolled in a challenging workshop in which writers are encouraged to perform our essays on the stage of a local theater. Since then, I have had many opportunities to read my work in local venues and in New York City. I love performing. For 26 years, I've honed my acting skills as a member of Community Playback Theater, a unique improvisational acting group. Among the blessings of aging, I now have excellent medical insurance thanks to Medicare, and I'm delighted with the senior discount at the movies, in the health food store, and on Tuesdays at ShopRite. But the best thing about having lived this long, all my monsters are dead. My parents, whom I could never please, no matter how I tried, are long gone. My adoptive parents, although extremely generous to me, didn't approve of me from the get-go. They're gone, too. My brother, whom I adored, is dead from the trinity of Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and a broken hip. My brother, my only sibling, tormented me when we were children and never stopped denigrating me after we were grown. I loved him deeply in spite of his attitude toward me. I weep over his loss. On my last visit with him a few months before he died, I sat beside him, pressing myself into him as close as I could. Holding his hand firmly, I willed my voice to direct my words to what shreds of memory he had left. "I forgive you," I told him. "Do you understand?" "Yes." He paused and nodded. "I think I do." He's dead these last 5 years. All my monsters are dead. I outlived them. I love being old. Moving on to the Centennial Living Complete Guide to Heart Health that we began last time, I believe. This is for people over 50 mostly. And the article we're reading now is the not-so-missing link. Your hard-working cardiovascular system serves your entire body, and the better it works, the better your overall health will be. So last time we talked about the chronic kidney disease and your heart as a COVID risk factor. This one, the issue dementia. The link, there are many forms of dementia, but the most common is Alzheimer's disease, accounting for about 70% of cases. It's caused by protein accumulations in the brain that damage the neurons. The second most common form is vascular dementia, which is directly associated with the cardiovascular system. When the blood vessels to the brain are compromised, either by a blockage, such as in the case of a stroke, or atherosclerosis, it deprives the brain of much-needed oxygen. Research has also shown that people with coronary artery disease, such as atherosclerosis, are more likely to develop the lesions associated with Alzheimer's than people without heart disease. New studies are looking at the role inflammation and amyloid beta peptides play in both conditions. Vascular dementia can be hard to diagnose, said Chad Hurry, but patients with risk factors for cardiovascular disease or diagnosed with cardiovascular disease, along with symptoms of worsening memory, focus or balance issues, should certainly bring it up to their physician. The issue, erectile dysfunction. The link, about 30 million men in the U.S. deal with erectile dysfunction, ED, which means they have trouble getting or maintaining an erection. It can be associated with psychological factors like stress, but if ED is occurring in a man's 40s and 50s, it can be a red flag that the body's cardiovascular system is not functioning properly. According to an article published in European Cardiology Review, atherosclerosis is the leading cause of ED, meaning there isn't enough blood flow going to the penis as a result of blocked arteries. Secondary factors can include high blood pressure, high cholesterol, obesity, and smoking. It can be embarrassing to talk about ED with a doctor, but don't ignore this symptom. Your doc can help screen you for cardiovascular risk factors, and contrary to what you might think, ED is not considered a normal part of the aging process, but rather a symptom that should be checked out. The issue, macular degeneration and other eye diseases. The link, age-related macular degeneration, AMD, which is caused by damage to the retina, is a leading cause of vision loss in people age 50 and older, according to the American Academy of Ophthalmology. Having heart disease is a risk factor for developing AMD, as are associated cardiovascular risks such as moderate to severe hypertension, smoking, and being overweight. Hypertension, for example, can damage the retina by stiffening the blood vessels in the eye and may even cause the vessels to leak. Blocked blood flow can also kill nerve cells in your eyes. Anyone who has high blood pressure, angina, or has had a previous stroke or heart attack should be especially diligent about having a yearly dilated eye exam. The eyes are also an amazing window into the cardiovascular system, says Jacoby, because the tiny blood vessels in the eyes can be observed by a doctor directly. I get people referred to me all the time because their eye doctor has spotted a vascular issue. An ophthalmologist might observe something like fluid buildup in the eye, which is linked to high blood pressure, or she might notice xanthelemas, which are cholesterol deposits on or around the eyelids and often associated with high cholesterol. A 2018 study that was published in the Journal of Cutaneous and Aesthetic Surgery found that 50% of people treated for xanthelemas turned out to have an underlying lipid disorder, meaning they might have high levels of cholesterol, triglycerides, or lipoproteins in their blood. The issue, osteoporosis. The link. Past age 50, osteoporosis, porous bones, is incredibly common, with up to half of women and 25% of men experiencing a bone fracture caused by the disease. Coronary heart disease and osteoporosis used to be seen as separate conditions, but researchers have found a correlation. A 2019 study published in the American Journal of Managed Care found that the more vessels involved in heart disease, the higher the risk of osteoporosis. The bone condition results in an increased level of calcium ions in the blood, which gradually settle in the inner walls of arteries. Over time, these deposits can lead to coronary heart disease. Coronary artery calcium testing can help you and your doc make informed decisions. Also, talk with your doctor about getting a dual energy X-ray absorptiometry, a DEXA test, to measure bone density if you know you have heart disease. The issue, psoriasis. The link, characterized by itchy, scaly patches on the skin, psoriasis affects 3 to 5% of the U.S. population. Psoriasis has been linked with systemic, not just in the skin, inflammation. People with the condition have a greater risk of experiencing cardiac events, such as heart attack or stroke. Recent research coming out of the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute found that treating psoriasis with immune-modulating drugs called biologics that turn down inflammation also reduce the development of plaques in the arteries. The research further provides evidence of the role inflammation in the body plays in causing and or exacerbating heart disease. If you have psoriasis, ask your doctor if biologic therapy might be an option if there are healthy lifestyle changes you can make as well, or whatever you can do to tamp down inflammation. The issue, tinnitus. The link, ringing in the ears is a common problem, especially in people age 55 and older, affecting roughly 20% of the population. Tinnitus can be caused by non-heart issues such as starting a new medication, stress, or damage from loud noises. There is also research in the Hearing Journal showing that arteriosclerosis, coronary blockages, and high blood pressure can cause tinnitus by decreasing the blood supply to the auditory system. Check with your doctor if you have ringing in your ears. And finally here, the issue, sleep apnea. The link that loud snoring is more than a nuisance, it can be a sign of something serious. People with sleep apnea stop breathing periodically during the night, sometimes many times a minute. So when they wake up, they feel tired, irritable, and have a hard time focusing. There are various types of sleep apnea, but they all result in interrupted breathing while sleeping, said Chaudhuri. This is not only gets in the way of achieving restful sleep, but also results in an increased risk of heart arrhythmias, particularly atrial fibrillation, and increased strain and weakening in different heart chambers. According to data from the American Thoracic Society, severe, untreated sleep apnea is also associated with high blood pressure and bradycardia, a too slow heart rate, as well as narrowed coronary arteries. Treatment for sleep apnea can include CPAP machines, oral appliances, supplemental oxygen, and surgery. Heart healthy living is really healthy living for the whole body, says Jacoby. While genetics do play a role, you can't go wrong with positive lifestyle changes, such as moving toward a vegetable-based diet and aiming to get 2 to 3 hours a week of exercise. The earlier you start intervention to lower your risk, the better, he says, because the benefits accumulate over time. And there's one more little sidebar here, the pollination factor. A 2021 study published in the European Heart Journal revealed that air pollination is an under-recognized risk factor in heart health. The researchers found that breathing in teensy bits of air pollution, called fine particulate matters, activates inflammatory cells within the bone marrow, which in turn causes inflammation throughout the body's arteries. Our next article is from Prevention Magazine, Finding Your Calm, The Healing Power of Gratitude. Call it vitamin G. Research shows that being grateful has a deep and lasting impact on your body. How to practice gratitude for a healthier, happier life. Being appreciative of things, large and small, can help you improve your physical health as much as your emotional well-being. Good friends, family, a home, the kindness of others. These are the things we give thanks for before diving into the turkey on Thanksgiving, or at least after everyone's gone home and the dishes are done, and we can also be grateful for a coffee table to put our feet upon. We know inherently that it's a good thing to take stock of and appreciate what's going on right in our own world. And now scientists are saying that doing so can boost our physical health as much as it can our mental state or our relationships. Studies have linked living a thankful life to fewer aches and pains, better sleep, and more. Making gratitude a daily practice is like taking a vitamin, says David Distento, Ph.D., a professor of psychology at Northeastern University in Boston and author of the book Emotional Success. He's not being hyperbolic either. He means it's like an actual vitamin, making your body work better. And the deep, long-lasting power of gratitude is blissfully simple to harness. Anyone can meditate. For a quick mindfulness meditation, close your eyes for 60 seconds and pay attention to your breathing, experiencing the sensation of air moving in and out of your nose. If you notice your mind straying, return your focus to your breath. It helps to know that when experts talk about gratitude, they mean more than saying thank you, the way you've been taught since you were old enough to speak. Gratitude is affirming the goodness in one's life and recognizing that its source lies outside the self, says Robert Emmons, Ph.D., a professor of psychology at the University of California, Davis, and author of The Little Book of Gratitude. It's feeling indebted, he says, not only to Aunt Charlotte for the hand-knit sweater, but also to nature for a beautifully crisp winter day. Emmons has been studying the connection for over 15 years. In one early study, He asked a group of volunteers to write down 5 things they were grateful for once a week for 10 weeks. Sample entries: the sun on my skin, becoming a great-grandparent. Other groups recorded either small hassles or neutral daily events. At the end of the study, the blessing counters reported feeling 25% happier, but the rest of the findings were far more tangible. The people who practiced gratitude spent 30% more time exercising and had fewer health complaints than those who didn't. Since then, research findings have confirmed more benefits. A 2015 study in the Journal of Health Psychology, for example, found that subjects who kept gratitude journals for just 2 weeks slept better and had lower blood pressure readings. Other research found that this kind of journaling resulted in a 40% drop in daily smoking rates after 2 months. Amazingly, even people who are very sick can benefit from feeling grateful. In one study, older adults who had early-stage heart failure had more consistent heart rates as well as lower levels of disease-causing inflammation when they regularly kept gratitude journals. This all speaks to a powerful connection between our minds and our bodies, and researchers have a few theories that could help explain it. For one thing, when we feel overwhelmed, whether by deadlines or by family squabbles, our nervous systems go into a state of high alert. This arousal floods the body with stress hormones like cortisol, which over time can cause a cascade of health problems, ranging from high blood pressure to inflammation. The sense of profound well-being that washes over us when we feel grateful sends a message to our bodies that all is well, quieting these responses. Feelings of gratitude trigger the parasympathetic or calming branch of the nervous system, says Edmonds. At the same time, making an effort to appreciate the things we have may help us resist the lure of instant gratification, the impulse behind so many of our worst health habits, including everything from lighting up a cigarette to skipping the gym. In his research, DeStenno found that people who felt grateful would delay an immediate cash award in favor of receiving a bigger one later on. Gratitude makes us value the future. It increases people's self-control and helps reduce impulsive behavior, DeStenno explains. That often translates into smart choices regarding one's health, such as going to sleep at a reasonable time, eating mindfully, and exercising. But perhaps the biggest payoff comes when we feel indebted to ourselves in the same way we do to others. People often report feeling grateful for their bodies, for the ability to see, smell, hear, says Emmons. As a result, they take better care of themselves. It's all a big, healthy, happy circle of gratitude. And there's no moment like right now and every day to give thanks. And there's a quote here: gratitude makes us value the future. It helps reduce impulsive behavior. Now I'm going to start on an article from AARP, the magazine. It's a pretty long article, so we'll have to break it up into several segments. When seconds count, this machine might save your life. There are frustratingly few treatments for stroke, but the emergency of mobile brain scanners may be the breakthrough doctors have been waiting for. And we have a picture here of one of these. It looks very high-tech. It happens sometimes something like this. You're talking with friends at dinner when your spouse asks why you're slurring your speech. Or maybe you're out for your morning walk when your movements suddenly turn jerky, as if half of the invisible strings that guide your limbs have suddenly been cut. Maybe pain is the herald, a crushing migraine or a starburst in the back of the head. Maybe you're alone, or worst of all, driving on the highway. That's how it was for Buddy Bailey, who at the time was a 70-year-old investment advisor, golf ball hunter, and steadfast husband of 51 years. It was a bluebird day in Houston. Bailey was breezing south toward Galveston on a courtesy call to a valued client. The Gulf Freeway was just rising up to cross El Dorado Boulevard, and for a fleeting moment, the view through the windshield was reduced to the gray race of the road and the untroubled sky. There are no exact words for what happened next. Darkness, dizziness, the world withdrawing, inputs going dead, a silent, mindless, timeless drift through four lanes of traffic, and then being jolted awake by the crash of his Mercedes-Benz against the freeway barrier and swerving back into the chaos of light. When the Benz finally came to rest, Bailey knows the danger still hasn't passed. Even so, there is nothing he can do because the violence is still taking place inside his head. And as I say, we will continue with this article. Actually, we have time for this little sidebar here about the clock is ticking. Every minute lost in treating a stroke means a greater loss of brain tissue and life quality. 10 minutes. Some brain regions are already irreversibly lost, but the damage can be limited if help arrives soon. 1 hour. As more time elapses, more brain tissue is lost. Urgent treatment could still limit any long-term disability. 3 hours. The treatment window is closing. Intervention at this time could still result in moderate disability. 6 hours. Without treatment, all at-risk tissue has died. The result may be severe physical and mental disability. So we will continue with this article at our next session. Now, we've been doing short little things about athletes who were people's idols. Let's see about Althea Gibson, 1927 to 2003, the first Black American to win a Grand Slam tennis title, the French Open, in 1956. When I was 10, I got to meet Althea. Our paths in life later crossed, but I'm not really sure her story resonated with me while I was playing. The older you get, the more you understand the challenges Black athletes have overcome or endured as you start having those experiences. As I ascended to being the leader of the United States Tennis Association, and at one time, Althea couldn't even play in a USTA event, I started to understand the magnitude of what she had accomplished. Now I put her on a pedestal every opportunity I can because of the sacrifices she made in her life. And this is from Katrina Adams, 52, who's a former tennis professional and the first Black president and CEO of the United States Tennis Association. So, folks, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. To be sure and listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.